Boya presents Class of 79.
Oh, yeah, right. I just forgot something, man. Before we dock, I think we ought to discuss the bonus situation.
Right.
Brett and
right.
I, we think we ought to... We deserve full shares, right,
right,
baby?
You see, Mr. Park and I feel that the bonus situation has never been on an equitable level.
Well, you get what you contracted for like everybody else.
Yes, but everybody else gets more than us.
Dallas, mother wants to talk to you.
Yes, you got lights for my eyes only.
Thanks for tuning in to Class of 79 on the Fangoria Podcast Network, where we take you behind the scenes of our favorite movies that turn 40 this year. I'm Natasha Pacetta, your host and vanguard of The Vault over here at Fangoria, and this is our series on Alien. To conclude our series on Alien, I'm joined by action director and stunt coordinator and performer Clive Curtis. Clive has a fascinating perspective on the making of Alien. He performs as Yaphet Kotto's stunt double as Parker. Clive talks about the extended Parker death sequence that never made it to the screen, working with Ridley Scott, and being cast as a stunt performer again in Aliens. Before we get to Clive's stories, I want to tell you about Fangoria magazine. In 1979, the first issue of Fangoria was released into the world. It's been 40 years, and Fangoria is better than ever. Each issue bringing you 100 pages of exclusive, carefully curated content honoring horror's past, present, and future. These articles and interviews will never be published online ever, so the only way to read them is by getting your hands on a physical collectible copy of your own. We can't give anything away that's in the magazine because we want the experience to be a surprise, but we can safely say you will not want to miss a single page. Head on over to Fangoria.com to learn more and to subscribe. And while you're there, make sure you enter my promo code CLASSOF to save 15% off your subscription. That's Fangoria.com, promo code CLASSOF. And I'm also excited to tell you about Satanic Panic. Sacrifices must be made, people. Fangoria's newest movie, Satanic Panic, starring Rebecca Romijn and Jerry O'Connell, is available now on VOD. Sam, a pizza delivery girl at the end of her financial rope, has to fight for her life and her tips when her last order of the night turns out to be high society Satanists in need of a virgin sacrifice. Directed by Chelsea Stardust and written by Grady Hendrix, Birth Movies Death calls Satanic Panic an absolutely entertaining horror film that will satisfy any viewers need for monsters and mayhem. Satanic Panic is available now on VOD. And I want to tell you about our Alien series sponsor, Titan Books. Titan Books has recently released The Making of Alien by J.W. Rinzler. To celebrate the movie's 40th anniversary, author J.W. Rinzler tells the fascinating story of how Alien evolved from a simple idea in the mind of writer Dan O'Bannon into one of the most memorable sci-fi horror thrillers of all time. With brand new interviews with Ridley Scott and other key members of the original production crew, and featuring many never-before-seen photographs and artwork from the archives, The Making of Alien is the definitive work on this masterpiece of popular cinema. The book is available now at bookstores and online retailers everywhere. Now let's get to Clive's stories. Today I want to talk to you about your work on Alien, and you have a pretty interesting story about your work on Alien, but before we get into that, I'd love to chat with you about how you got into doing stunts.
You know, this was never a world I knew anything about. I'm not one of those little boys that grew up thinking I wanted to be a stuntman because I didn't know what it was. And basically, I was an athlete at national level, participating in various sports, and was the older of three national championship. And I thought I wanted to be an actor at one point, and then modeling. But I then realized, you know, I'm quite an introvert. And it was by sheer fluke that one of my clubs I was going to, participating in sports, a wrestling club actually, the coach said to me that there was this Hollywood stuntman that frequented the club. And I thought, gosh, well, I didn't think, gosh, it didn't make any impact on me at the time. And he wasn't there very frequent, but one night he showed up. And I was about to sort of that that following weekend, I had the English Championships to go to. My coach wasn't able to make it, and he volunteered himself. And I'd only recently met him. I think I'd met him on a couple of occasions, so this was very kind of him, to be my second. We duly went, and I regained the championship. And at the end of the day, he said to me, "You ought to be a stuntman." And I said, "What's that?" And he explained, and he said, "We haven't got a black stuntman in England or Europe that I know of." And that's how it got started.
Wow.
So I became not only the first black stuntman in Europe, in Britain, but also in Europe.
Wow. And did you find, once you got into it, that you enjoyed it?
Well, obviously, once I got into it, there was a very long road of, you know, one's now into a very new situation, because when I did sport, it was truly the day of amateurs, where you receive nothing. Now they've got, even the amateurs have enormous sponsorship. That would have disqualified me or anyone within my situation. So now what I'm thinking, you know, I was fascinated by it, because I'm now doing something that I'm enjoying and I'm being paid to do it.
It's the dream.
Absolutely. And so what it required for me to do was that I started, obviously, it was like investing in a business. You started to include other sports, which would be an asset to the business. And so when you were not working, that's what you did. It was a business. You invested in it by learning other sports and becoming proficient at it. So that, you know, the more versatile you were, the more one would expect to work.
And so you got into stunts. And I would love to know how you came to be involved with Ridley Scott's Alien.
So I got the call, and it was only a few days' work. And, you know, Ridley at the time was virtually just himself entering into the feature film business from commercials. There were a couple of things he'd done before, but, you know, he wasn't as huge as one as he now is or has become. But what I will never forget, when I showed up on set, because again, Alien was a small budget movie.
That's right.
You know, it wasn't, it was a rather intimate setting. And it was extraordinary to see this person sitting there. We'd been introduced, and then he was sitting there by the monitor, and we started the work. Things were still being contemplated. And after a couple of days, even though we'd continued trying to achieve, because this was a massive fight, me doubling Yaphet Kotto against the alien, the monster. And, you know, it all started to go very well. And I'll never forget Ridley saying to me, "Gosh, I cannot thank you enough." They kept telling me what we're now doing could not be done. And
wow,
here we are doing it.
Wow.
And that was extremely flattering to hear.
Because what you're talking about, that scene was actually Parker's original death scene. And Ridley had, you know, he had done all the storyboards for this scene, and it was quite complex. And if I can just read to the audience for a second, his caption underneath the storyboard, this is Parker's original death sequence. It says, "The alien takes a bite out of Parker. He screams, writhes. Lambert can stand it no longer. She raises the flamethrower and fires. The creature swings Parker around as a shield. He catches the full blast. Lambert instantly released the trigger mechanism. But Parker is now a kicking ball of flame, still held at arm's length by the alien." Wow. That is quite a scene.
It is quite a scene, but again, that had changed.
Yeah. It went and through a couple different.
That's right. And what made it so, it was extremely physically demanding. And that was because of the nature of the set, which was quite, the ceiling we were working to was quite low. So to get all the pulley operations to work as one would imagine it to work, thinking of it being in a studio with the sort of height you've got, when we've now created a set, being on a spaceship and it's quite low, it presented another problem and different issues. And these were some of what and why people were saying, you know, this is going to be very difficult, it won't work.
If you could like walk us through the actual scene that you guys were shooting that day and why the difficulties presented themselves, give us a little understanding of what was actually taking place, what you were asked to do as Parker's stunt double.
Well, the monster, as you read out, yes, the bite and all of that, we went through all of those bits. And, you know, the tail was a very integral part, that when it lashed the tail out and you were caught by it, you would go flying across the spaceship. And so in trying to achieve those sort of effects, it was very demanding.
Was Balaji Bodego in the alien suit when you did your Parker scenes?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, oh, my, what a nice man, because I tell you, it was not the most comfortable outfit for him to wear.
I'm sure.
And you know, the head was really quite heavy.
Mm.
And he, though very tall he was very thin to get into that costume. And, you know, as soon as there was cut, the first thing they had to do is to get over to him and relieve him of that head. But, it was just, you know, he had a very placid nature, and everyone was just worked together. It was, you know, there was just, so yes, there was drama, but there was no drama. The drama was in front of the camera.
Right.
You know, not behind the camera.
Well, that's awesome to hear that.
Ridley has a very, he has a very definite idea. I would love to have worked with Ridley again, actually. And as we never did, and I so greatly admired him and his work. But it's really wonderful when you're working with a director that really does know what they want, really do know what they want, or even sometimes they're unsure of it, because your way, you may have a visual idea in your head, but then it's slightly different whether one can physically achieve this.
Right.
When you start to put the human body in place. And so you're both on a journey together. And sort of, I felt that we were simpatico. And so that helps enormously, because there are times you're working with another individual and the cohesion just isn't there.
Mm-hmm.
You're just not communicating. You can feel that this is not a good relationship, and you're trying to give absolutely everything you can, but they might not be the best communicators. But in this case, we were both very lucky, because we communicated really well. And so when that happens, you really want to give as much 100%. And when you're getting feedback of appreciation, you know, that's really rather lovely. And that's what makes the job so special. You start off as strangers, and two strangers come together, and you're sharing something, you're on a journey, and it's working. And with all of that, as we progressed and we're getting this, it was again, though, becoming very readily apparent that the original, unique thing which they'd achieved, you know, with the alien coming from the chest, they now realize that day by day, as people would go see this, they would realize it was very apparent that they had something incredibly special. The decision had to be made, do we try to upstage this?
Ah.
And so this is why this enormous fight sequence we ended up having with the monster never ended up on the screen.
Wow. Because they wanted to preserve the chest burster scene.
Absolutely.
Wow.
It would have been foolish, actually, to compete against something so unique.
It's definitely a compliment to your skill and, you know, to you and Ridley's communication that you could have achieved a scene that was even more striking than the chest burster scene. But on one hand, it's a shame it never made it into the movie. So it's kind of like a good and bad thing at the same time.
Well, I think that's where, for me anyway, that's where intelligence comes in. Because the scene would have very much been a very physical, achievable thing that one can get to. But, you know, that scene of the alien coming out of his chest, John's chest, that has become an icon.
Yes.
That's a very iconic sequence.
Absolutely.
In filmmaking, it'll be talked about for the rest of as long as this go on.
Oh, yeah. It's 40 years since Alien debuted in theaters, and we're still talking about it.
Yeah, but, you know, as long as this media is being worked in, it has left a benchmark. People were literally going to rushes. I didn't see anyone physically vomit, but I was told about this, and I had no doubt that they were. And it is to recognize the finite situation that one's created, that it doesn't always come from the obvious. There are subtler ways of making an impact. You know, I thought of having worked, there are a few directors I've worked with and a couple that I haven't worked with, but I would have loved to have worked with. And so I made it my business to find out more about them. And, you know, over the years, I've watched some of Ridley's films and I've found, and yes, I can understand the man has an art degree. And so I can see that at work in his work, because, you know, I am very heavily into culture and art and that sort of thing. So I can recognize it.
Oh, absolutely. I've said this before, and I think if you watch Alien today, it looks like it could have been filmed yesterday. It really does. It has that, you know, you think something from 1979 would look like something from 1979, but if you watch Alien, it's as good as any sci-fi thriller horror movie that's made today. It really is. And that's because Ridley was so hyper focused, and like you said, it's so nice when someone knows what they want. And it really seems like Ridley absolutely knew exactly what he wanted in every frame of that movie. And it's just, that's why we celebrate it so much. It's a work of art. It truly is. And
Well, yes, you've hit the nail on the head. It's a work of art.
Yes.
His visual interpretation is absolutely wonderful.
It's exhilarating to know that you were a part of that production and were on set for this incredible movie. Do you, Clive, have any other memories from being on the set of Alien that you can share with us?
I came onto the scene at the latter stages of the movie, because my input was that's when it was needed, the latter stages. And so to walk on set on any film that has been going for a while, and you've arrived, and the camaraderie on set was absolutely fabulous. Immediately you felt a part of the scene, you felt a part of the team.
That's so great.
And, you know, yeah, that is so overwhelming to be able to walk onto a film set that has been going for months, and immediately you feel a part of it. You know, you can go on to things, and you it takes a while to get in because people have been there as a family working together.
Right.
But this was very relaxed, and it was a very intimate group of people and a small film by certain other standards. And but nonetheless, all of the individuals were there doing their bit, all giving, you know, no egos. And I think that's magical.
You have been in not one Alien movie, but two Alien movies. You were a stuntman in Alien, and then you were a stuntman in Aliens.
Yes, and another, you know, massive scene, and it very changed, a completely different scenario twist to the same movie.
Yeah.
You know, the same sort of storyline, but with a completely different take on it.
Yeah, you were Rico Ross's stunt double for Private Frost and had a fire sequence.
Oh, that was a massive stunt.
Yeah, tell us about that.
Well, you know, it's a sort of stunt that you really have to have your wits about you because, and it took a lot of preparation because you know, the one thing, it's you're completely engulfed in flames. We're not using any breathing apparatus.
Wow.
So the one thing you have to continuously put into your brain is that once you're alight, you must not breathe.
That's difficult.
You know, it's something that you really have to, because, you know, you just burn your lungs out.
Mm.
And so, and then, of course, you know, there's a sequence whereby you become completely engulfed. I then had to run towards, as a quite, I can't remember the distance, but I then had to run, hit the scaffolding bar and topple over into this hole. And all of that now is being done, you're blindfolded because you're completely engulfed in flames.
Oh my gosh.
And so the way we achieved that was that before, as within rehearsal, I would go through those movements time and time again so that you remembered your movements, so that when you became completely engulfed, you would be able to go through this. It would be like a blind person practicing a route.
Wow.
And I remember hitting the scaffolding, which came to about my waist height, and just dropping my head, which I then went over. And you know, obviously my colleagues were there on standby. As soon as they heard cut, they were in, and they did the deed. But it's the sort of stunt that really has to be worked out and mapped out with no room for error at all.
Oh yeah, I mean, you don't mess around with fire. You just don't.
No, there are certain stunts which we term, there are things which we term as a run of the mill, and there are things that gain you respect even among your peers, and that sort of job is certainly one that does.
Did your work on Alien, did that lead to you being cast in Aliens?
No, I wouldn't have thought so. I think obviously naturally Rico and I were similar physical appearance and so forth, and that's what I would have thought would have been the deciding factor.
Well, that's really cool that you had the opportunity to perform stunt work in the original movie and then in the sequel, which is, you know, equally fantastic.
And a completely different energy.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Again, we had a wonderful cast, but the energy was just so different. Well, you could literally feel the energy because you've got all these young people there, all muscled up and training, and just it's a different concept completely. And you feel that through the movie, that there's always an edge of, you know, something might happen, something might explode. I personally thought that you could feel that energy, and that energy was on set all the time.
Mm.
It was a physical, nubile energy pulsating.
Very cool, very cool. On Aliens, you worked with James Cameron, and you worked with Ridley Scott on Alien. How were their directing styles different or similar?
Very, very.
Very different.
Very different. Because for me, I thought I was much closer to Ridley because of how we were on a journey trying to achieve something that he had a concept of and was constantly being told it couldn't be achieved. And then once we met and he started to see this coming to life, obviously we were responding with each other, and it was much a one-to-one situation. Whereas on Aliens, I personally wasn't as physically close to Cameron because it's a much bigger setup. Even the floor space, it's just different. We didn't need to communicate in the same way because we now have a stunt, which it's a stunt, and it's a very physical stunt, and it's just that the parameters of how this is being dealt with is very different. You know, he basically could be at the monitor. There's no reason. There is a closer working relationship between myself and the stunt director, the stunt coordinator. There's no real reason for me and James to have to collaborate on this.
Gotcha.
He does that through the stunt coordinator on that particular film. He then liaises with me, and he and I go through with the team of people we have as safety people. So it's very much a stunt team input of getting that sequence, because it's up to the coordinator to relay what's required, what he's already spoken of with James. So there's no real reason for James and I to have to go into dialogue.
Well, I think it's fantastic that you had those two experiences, and they were, you know, very different, but still really, really cool that you got to work on Alien and Aliens and be a part of those movies and their legacy.
Final report of the commercial starship Nostromo. Third officer reporting. The other members of the crew, Kane, Lambert, Parker, Brett, Ash, and Captain Dallas are dead. Cargo and ship destroyed. I should reach the frontier in about 6 weeks. With a little luck, the network will pick me up. This is Ripley, last survivor of the Nostromo, signing off.
Thanks for listening to Fangoria Presents Class of 79. We really appreciate you tuning in. And if you've enjoyed this podcast, we'd love it if you would rate, review, and subscribe on iTunes or on your favorite podcast app. And follow Fangoria on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for the horror content you crave. Class of 79 is a Fangoria Podcast Network original, produced and hosted by Natasha Pasetta, executive producers Dallas Saunier and Phil Nobile Jr., associate producer Jessica Safavamare, art and design by Ashley Detmering, sound recording, design, and mixing by Natasha Pasetta, music by James Malone, for Fangoria, Brandon Wynerdy, Jason Koslerich, Rachel Wilson, and special thanks to Udo Kier.